I'm Gary Nall, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our theme today, tracing the timeline of the COVID pandemic and its role in the Great Reset. What this means is that we're going to have one of the world's leading authorities on understanding the Great Reset and COVID. He is Professor Emeritus at the University of Ottawa in Ontario, Dr. Michael, that's M-I-C-H-E-L, Chofsudovsky, C-H-O-S-S-U-D-O-V-S-K-Y. He's been an economic advisor to many developing countries. He is the founder of the Center for Research on Globalization at the University of Montreal. He is founding editor of globalresearch.ca. He's one of the leading visionaries in economic trends associated with the free market globalization, having identified over the decades many of the problems in global neoliberal economics. It doesn't matter who's in office, Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter who controls the media at any given time, all of it supports the neoliberal agenda or hegemony, meaning powers beyond our capacity to hold accountable. And that's unfortunate, but he does hold them accountably. You see a lot of articles written against these people like Bill Gates in his global research every week. He's also a person that is not afraid to look at austerity and economic shock therapy and the association between rising poverty and unmitigated greed and the pillaging of developing nations' resources due to the structural adjustments of the absolutely corrupt World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization. And he also exposes the criminalization of our banking system. Global Research is now one of the highly recommended sites to find excellent independent articles and analysis of the COVID virus pandemic, because where a lot of mainstream, orthodox, pro-vaccine physicians and scientists have been blocked and actually canceled, erased, and attacked on Wikipedia and Google, Facebook, and Twitter, they have a form they can use on globalresearch.ca. So that's what he's about. He's needed. Now, his approach is to be very methodical. So unlike many of our progressive commentary hours, this is going to be where you're going to have to think well, because he's going to take you step by step through everything that's happened. And then he's also going to then... I'm going to get into some serious questions a little later on in the conversation after he lays out the fundamental arguments to show that everything we've been taught about the agenda, what we should do, like the quarantining and the social distancing and wearing masks outdoors, et cetera, and everybody be at home at the same time, young and old, sick and well, and wait for the vaccine and nothing else will work. This was disastrous by any measure. And that's why orthodox, mainstream scientists and physicians are coming out and challenging it in unimaginable numbers. We're talking about tens of thousands of people. I've never seen it in my career. And so we'll ask him about all this now. Now we'll go over to my guest, standing by from Quebec, Dr. Michael Chofsudovsky. Nice to have you to our program today, sir.
Delighted to be on the program.
Thank you. What we're going to do is I'm going to offer a larger overarching question that has many variables. Take any of these that you wish to start. I'd like for you to address, for example, the threats that the coronavirus pandemic has caused to our economic stability, our social and technological stability, the danger of the Great Reset that everyone in power, all the major heads of countries, all the major people on the World Economic Forum, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberg Group, the Davos, everyone is saying we need to get right into the Great Reset, and yet the average person has no idea how this might impact them. So, and also an actual timeline. And why the timeline? Because there are several different perspectives. One perspective is that this was a gain-of-function research project that was funded through different subsidiaries or offshoots of Anthony Fauci's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. and that this ended up being done in North Carolina. But then when President Barack Obama put a moratorium on gain-of-function research because it was so dangerous, and there have been multiple accidents throughout the United States and around the world on a regular basis, that he said, "Not, no more." And yet Anthony Fauci managed to find loopholes in that moratorium so he could continue legally giving money. And as a result, he gave it to one person with one group, a nonprofit, that then funded the North Carolina, then funded Wuhan, then went over to Wuhan. So there's no question that unless you're out-and-out biased defender of Anthony Fauci, if you look at the facts, all of this was funded by different people around the world, but it ended up in Wuhan. Then the one scenario is it escaped accidentally and then manifested, and then they tried to cover it up, and everything else came from that. Another scenario is that this was intentional, meaning the Chinese had been working for some time on trying to create an actual weaponized virus to be used as a biological weapon, not as a vaccine. And we have statements. We actually have an article written 5 years ago by one of the top people within the defense industry in China supporting that contention that they were working on such a virus. But we don't have the actual proof that that was actually the outcome, that it was put into the system. So right now, most people are looking at the idea that, yeah, this was a human-made one, and the latest nail in that coffin was the winner of the Nobel Prize for discovering the HIV virus, Luc Montagnier at the Institut Pasteur, said this definitely was a human-made virus, and it's also causing the virus vaccine is actually causing the variants. That's something brand new as of yesterday. But no matter which side is correct, one thing is certain. Some of the smartest, most powerful, wealthy people on the planet saw immediately how to play this catastrophe, this epidemic, to their advantage. And they have done exactly that. And the latest is the Great Reset. And yet it's being told to us, the average person, that don't worry, this is all for your good. And I say nothing they've ever done is for my good. Not Anthony Fauci, not Bill Gates, none of the global neoliberalists, none of it. So I'd like your input with a timeline to show how close the two are associated. The Great Reset, the taking power, and the pandemic, COVID pandemic. The forum is yours. Take your time.
Well, let me just start by focusing on the timeline, namely January 2020. But in fact, there are issues which preceded 2020. I do not believe in the bioweapons hypothesis because the data and the concepts simply don't confirm it. On the 30th of January of last year, the World Health Organization declared a public health emergency of international concern outside China. There were only 83 cases. We're talking about the COVID PCR test. 83 cases outside China. 5 in the United States, 3 in Canada, 4 in France, 4 in Germany. There were more people who fell from their bicycles in the course of that, of late January. But the political statements made by the Director General of the WHO simply do not confirm a public health emergency at an international level. It's an absolute lie. So that in a sense, this whole crisis has been fed by successive lies, starting with 83 cases in late January, followed by President Donald Trump's decision to freeze air travel with China, which then, of course, led to a global freeze in air travel at a later date. And what I'm saying is that, first of all, those numbers don't justify a public health emergency at an international level. Second, it's not a pandemic. And then if you look at the definitions that they provide of the so-called virus, they define it as, and I'm talking about Fauci, I'm talking about the various official definitions, WHO, CDC, they say it is similar to seasonal influenza. It's a coronavirus which has similar features to seasonal influenza in terms of actual, you know, disease patterns, high fever, and so on and so forth. I won't get into that, but in effect, if you look at their statements, including Anthony Fauci, this is not a killer virus. It's similar to seasonal influenza. Now, he may, of course, contradict his own peer-reviewed reports in public statements, but I have reviewed that, and we had 83 cases on the 30th of January, and then if I skip to the 20th of February, which was the onslaught of the most serious financial crisis in world history, since 1929, that was on the 20th of January. Now, on the 20th of January, the World Health Organization Director General Tedros made another statement, and he said, the windows are closing. We have a narrow opportunity. Things are very, very serious. We have to avoid the pandemic. And how many cases did he have in making these shock and awe statements? He had 1,078 cases worldwide out of China for a population of 6.4 billion. Okay? Now, that's the population of planet Earth minus China. Okay? Planet Earth is 7.8 billion. Now, anybody who has a minimal understanding of statistics or a minimal understanding of public health issues will say, what on earth? You've got 1,078 cases outside of China. Does that constitute, this shock and awe statement, et cetera, et cetera? On that very same day, financial markets crashed because they said the pandemic's imminent, and they quoted the World Health Organization. And knowing how financial markets function, that statement immediately triggered a collapse. But there was obviously inside information there, and there was also foreknowledge of what Dr. Tedros was going to say, and Dr. Tedros and Bill Gates have a professional relationship. They know one another. Now, what is worth mentioning is that as of February, there has been a massive increase in wealth by the billionaire foundations and major. Well, it's tabulated by Forbes. The Institute of Policy Studies in Washington came out with a couple of very interesting studies. But nonetheless, what happened is that based on ridiculously low numbers, they are feeding a fear campaign. And then what happens on March 11, that's when the lockdown is declared. Okay? And again, the figures are trivial. At that time, the WHO officially declares a worldwide pandemic at a time when there were only 44,279 cases and 1,440 deaths outside China. Again, population of 6.4 billion. Now, that doesn't, under any circumstances, represent a pretext or a justification for declaring a pandemic on the one hand, but on the other hand, the policies which were implemented, namely the lockdown instructions, they were transmitted to 193 member states of the United Nations, and the instructions were very explicit. Close down your economy, okay? People, stay, people, which means the labor force and their families and so on, stay at home. So what do you do? You paralyze the labor market, you paralyze production, you paralyze education, all the various institutions attached to civil society, and that as a means to saving lives, when in fact the number of cases is abysmally low. And I should say that among the 44,000 cases, it's a PCR test. And we know now that the PCR test is flawed. We knew it right at the beginning, but now the World Health Organization has come up with very explicit statements saying that the test is invalid. And they say they're even calling for retesting. Now, that was the test which the WHO actually implemented in late January. And then they said, essentially, they said, mea culpa, we made a mistake. And we are now calling, 1 year later, they're calling for retesting. That statement is on record. Now, the March 11, in the United States, I think it was on March 13 that the lockdown was actually declared. But when you declare a lockdown, you are essentially closing down the economy of planet Earth. Not entirely, of course, but the instructions are such that, and if they're followed by the governments, and that boggles the mind, 190 countries actually follow those guidelines, close down their economy. We have a situation of total paralysis in the urban landscape. And then, of course, then we have the face mask. Well, that came somewhat later. But the situation of the actual decision to lock down the global economy is certainly not a solution to a public health crisis, quite the opposite. Anybody who has a minimal understanding knows that if you close down your economy, you paralyze everything, okay? And you paralyze purchasing power, and you trigger extreme poverty, and so on. In analyzing these events, I'm struck by the fact that particularly the Biden administration blame all this on the virus. Okay, there's a stock market collapse on the 20th of January. I'm sorry, the 20th of February. Then there's another stock market crash just after the March 11 decision, WHO. Again, it was Black Thursday. And they said the virus has triggered the financial crash. Well, that's absolute nonsense. Everybody knows that that those complex variables, which include naked short selling, derivatives, put options, and so on, require the human hand. They may have algorithms behind it, but ultimately, it is that mechanism which ultimately led to a massive enrichment of a handful of billionaires in the course, I would say, starting in February and then proceeding after March 11. And what is at stake is the destabilization of the real economy. The real economy is exactly what we live on a daily basis. It's the whole landscape of economic activities. Most people, most adults have a job to which they go. It's the denial of employment, of the right to work. It's the paralysis and destruction of the entire economic system. And it's also the destabilization of the small and medium-sized enterprise. Now, what boggles the mind is that people continue to view this as a public health crisis, when in fact it's a much broader. I'm not saying that the public health crisis is not there. Yes, it is. But in fact, that public health crisis is much more the consequence of the paralysis of economic activity, the impact on purchasing power, the fact that you can't pay your rent, you can't pay your mortgage, you have famines in India. That is what is the public health crisis. Having analyzed in the course of my career the impacts of macroeconomic reforms on mortality and morbidity, I can say with all certainty that the lockdown creates poverty and despair, unemployment, which eventually also has an impact on public health variables. So that sort of in a nutshell is the timeline. Now there are many other aspects prevailing to what we're living now. But I should say that much of what we are told is an outright lie. The database is totally invalid. It's totally invalid. And who says it? The WHO. The face mask is bad for your health. Who says it? Fauci. And he published it a few months before he then gave instructions to everybody to wear a face mask. So you have a whole series of lies, and I would say most of the lies are corroborated by public statements or documents. The CDC in the United States gives instructions to certifiers as to what they should put in a death certificate. And they say, we would want COVID-19 to be the underlying, that's a medical term, the underlying cause of death more often than not, quote unquote, more often than not. The instructions are very clear. They're not based on, and then they don't require an autopsy, they don't require tests. So they're simply dictating criteria which will push up the death rates. And then they have their PCR tests, which are totally unreliable. And now we know that they're unreliable because the World Health Organization, 1 year later, has said, they don't say, well, we screwed up. They say, well, we might have to retest because what they call the threshold enlargement cycle 35 and above doesn't really tell you anything. It doesn't identify whether they're fragments of the virus or not, but it gives you a positive, and it is a biased estimate. Now, that is absolutely clear that the data bank is invalid, and it's not a question of identifying fake positives or fake negatives and so on, as we had almost a year ago when we started analyzing the concepts. No, the World Health Organization has simply said, if you're using a threshold of 35 cycles or above, the test is invalid and you have to start over again.
Would you explain what a threshold is, or what duplicating the actual PCR means, or the average person may not appreciate why, when most of these tests, PCR tests that people have, whether it's the swab or a blood test, it is actually measuring particulate matter. So explain that in a little more depth, please.
Yeah, I'm not a medical doctor, but I've read these concepts very carefully, and if the World Health Organization says that if the cycle of enlargement is above 35, then the test is essentially doesn't yield any results. It may yield very misleading results, and it doesn't necessarily, it can't identify the fragments of the virus. That's my understanding. and there are various other interpretations, but you can have people who maybe have COVID positive, who are in perfect health, and you may have people who may have some of the symptoms, but you don't even know whether those symptoms correspond to COVID. They could correspond to seasonal influenza or to some other respiratory infection. And without entering into the debate on the measurement, I think what we have to understand is that at the outset, these numbers were absolutely ridiculously low. And it was only in March they started pumping the test, that everybody has to get tested with a swab taken in their nose and their throat. And then it's submitted it's sent to a lab. The pattern in, from what I understand, that the recommended pattern worldwide was in most cases 35 and above. And at least the European Union, that was the case. And that means that not only is COVID, or let's say SARS-2, lead to a viral infection, which we call COVID-19, which in most cases, according to WHO, is similar to seasonal influenza with some cases of complication, etc. I think we have to acknowledge that, but let's take the definitions that they give. And it's not, it may be a serious health concern, but there are many other serious health concerns. And the main issue there is that on the 11th of March, a lockdown is recommended. And it was, Neil Ferguson from Imperial College London, which put together some kind of a model and then said, oh, this is a way to protect people from the infection, lock them up in their homes, et cetera, et cetera. And the unspoken agenda was the destabilization of national economies worldwide. I don't have any other, anybody knows that if you paralyze the labor force and you prevent them from going to work and you close down every single service sector activity in urban areas and so on and so forth, what do you do? And in addition to that, you paralyze air travel, okay? And that means communication between countries, which is necessary for international trade. Well, the result is obvious. You are paralyzing economic activity, and economic activity is the basis for sustaining the level of living of millions and millions of people. Okay, it paralyzes supply lines. Now, very few economists have spoken out in that regard. They view that as something separate. They say the virus is responsible for that. No, you paralyze the supply lines. On the one hand, scarcity start developing, but at the same time, you compress the purchasing power of millions and millions of people worldwide. In other words, the demand for consumer goods and food and so on is affected. People don't meet their food requirements. And knowing how this operates, particularly in developing countries, I can say that this is, first of all, unprecedented in world history. It's the most serious crisis, economic crisis in world history. We've never had the simultaneous closing down of 190 economies to a less or greater extent. And that depends on national circumstances. And we have a situation now where in the so-called developed countries, we are involved in providing safety nets, because if we weren't providing those safety nets, there would be a really mass protest movement. In other words, people who are unemployed, people who lose their work, will receive some form of a compensation from governments, but that is not going to go on forever. At one point, austerity measures will be implemented. And I should mention that many of the increases in, particularly look at the United States, where the Biden administration has increased expenditures in a whole series of areas, but in the emphasis has been on the security apparatus and on the military. It's not, and then the handouts to individuals and so on and so forth. But I think that once we go back to what might be described the new normal, what we're going to have is the most serious debt crisis in world history. And there are several factors which are conducive to that debt crisis. On the one hand, you have a situation where the state is bankrupt, so to speak, because there are no tax revenues coming in. If people are unemployed, and if small and medium-sized enterprises have gone bankrupt, and large companies are not making profits, well, there's no money going to come into the coffers of the state. Everybody will be deducting capital losses. Wages are not paid, so then there's no payment of taxes and so on. So that, in effect, there's a fiscal crisis of the state which is unprecedented. And it's not in one country, it's in all countries, or in most countries, there is a fiscal crisis of the state because the labor market is frozen, the corporations are in bankruptcy, and nobody is paying taxes. I'm exaggerating in my statements, but that is the tendency where we're going.
But Professor, let me ask two questions, please, that are interrelated to this topic. One is, that's exactly what the Great Reset people are wanting. They want to switch to a completely digital currency. They want to give people a guaranteed income, just enough to survive, but not enough to thrive. They want to be able to track every single purchase you make, wherever you go, all communications, and control that, much like China does with its social merit credits. Because right now in China, if you do something they do not like, they will suddenly, wherever you're at, they can have everyone's phone ring, your picture is there, and they'll say, this person has done the following, which shows they're not a good citizen, and shame the person. That's going on right now and has been for over a year. In the United States, we're looking at something similar, where big tech, including Bill Gates, controls everything, your medical records. They now say they have a new, just yesterday it came out, I haven't reported on it yet, they have a new microchip that's the size of a sand flea, tiny, little speck, like a grain of sand, that would go under your skin, and the average person would say, well, that's good, and everything can be on it, all your records on it. But also it means they can also have control. Whatever is measured that goes out to them also can be influenced by what comes in, and they're not telling us anything about what that would be. The other side of this question is, part two, is Richard Gale and myself, for the past 5 years, have been tracking the actual debt of the United States, all debt. That means corporate debt and individual mortgage debt, student loan, credit card, all of your basic car payment debts. And then we look at the federal debt, including underfunded or unfunded entitlements. And then we add that up. And when you add all of it up, it's $302 trillion. Our gross domestic product is minimal compared to that, around $20 to $22 trillion. And our income from all taxes is minimal. We're not even able, with all of our income coming in, to pay the interest on our total debt. And the Biden administration, along with Trump, is now in the next 2 to 3 years, if they continue on the same trajectory of correcting nothing, just putting money into the system, and almost all that money goes to people who didn't deserve it or earn it. I'm not talking about average people. I'm talking about corporations and those who have the right lobbyists. So now what you have is you have at some point everyone wanting in on the dollar and treasuries. In fact, most people say, well, my portfolio contains gold, silver, and treasuries because the United States can't go bankrupt. But individual states would have gone bankrupt. Every single state except North Carolina was in gross default on their constitutional, state constitutional requirements to maintain their pensions, and they didn't. They're billions of dollars in debt on that. Now the Biden administration is giving all the states all that money so they can help put that money, hopefully, towards their debts. But who knows what will actually happen. So now, just remember several years ago, 2008, 2009, when Greece was looked upon as the financial basket case because its debt to its gross domestic product was about 149%. We are over 1,200% minimally, 1,200% debt to our gross domestic product, and yet we're considered the smart guys on the block, and everybody should trust in the dollar. And I'm saying, my goodness, the emperor has no clothes. Sooner or later, there's going to be a great reset of that dollar value where China or other currencies, combined currencies, may be backed by gold, like yuan in China and the ruble in Russia, though it's a small economy. Somewhere along the way, there'll be a reckoning. I don't know when, but I know that you cannot hold $300 trillion in debt, which is more than all the money in the world, all the assets in the world put together. Our debt is greater, without saying we've been screwing up a long time and not held accountable. And everybody, except some of those like yourself or Michael Hudson, who are aware of this problem and talking about it, everyone else, no one's talking about it. Would you talk about that, please?
Well, I think your assessment of the situation, of the debt situation, is incisive, and it points to the outbreak of a major global debt crisis. How and when that is ultimately to be determined, but let me respond to your earlier concern on this digitization of millions of people around the world. In other words, the issue of implanting microchips in human bodies. Now, that is, I think, one of the dimensions of this reset button, or pushing the reset button. It's the debt crisis is there, and what it signifies is that ultimately the state is being privatized, ultimately, because the creditors call the shots, and they have for years. But now what the World Economic Forum, and in particular, let's say, World Economic Forum Chairman Klaus Schwab, when he talks about the reset, and he's been talking about the reset for quite a number of years, let me just go back a few years, because nobody had ever heard of the reset until recently. But back in I think it was 2014, saying 6 years ago, he was calling, in the context of the World Economic Forum, on pushing the reset button as a means to resolving a worldwide crisis. And now the question is, what is this reset button? What does it imply? It implies, in a sense, from the point of view of Schwab, the digitization of individuals, of humanity, the implanting of microchips in human bodies. And in essence, that is also part of this experimental COVID messenger RNA vaccine project. Now, what Schwab actually says is that, and I quote, "What we see is a kind of fusion of the physical, digital and biological worlds. In other words, he actually confirmed this in an interview a couple of years subsequently in the Swiss-French language TV network, RTS, Radio Télévision Suisse. They asked him the question, when will that happen? In other words, this integration of human beings into the digital world, so to speak. And he said within the next 10 years, and he said, we can imagine that we will implant these microchips in our brains and in our skin. And then there will be direct communication between the brain and the digital world. Now, these are bold statements. They don't get into the details, but there is, as you mentioned, a project to digitize human beings, and that all their personal information would be contained in this chip, and that the chip would then be linked to data banks and logarithms, et cetera, and ultimately, this of course has ultimately this constitutes. Certainly an impediment on what we call democracy. I recall the statement made by David Rockefeller, the late David Rockefeller, when he said that global governance or the constitution of a world government would be made up by an alliance. He called it a public-private partnership, but in fact, the public element wasn't even there. He said it's an alliance of bankers and intellectuals, and that this would be a far more efficient structure of government than what we have today, which is so-called chaos of representative democracy. Those quotations are there. In other words, there is a very powerful financial elite which is using these advanced digital technologies essentially to establish a system of global governance where 7.8 billion people their data is encompassed in a data bank, and that this is an instrument of control, and it also impinges on people's private life and so on and so forth, as you suggested. I think its logic would be somewhat different to what you described with regard to China, where there is this notion. It's based on Confucius in China. I've spent a good part of my career doing research on China and brought out a book many years ago, which was called Towards Capitalist Restoration, at a time when everybody on the left said, you're absolutely idiotic and stupid. There is no capitalist restoration in China. Well, there is, but that's another topic. But I think if we go along with this vaccine passport, the vaccine passport has these characteristics. It hands over your personal details, financial details, to a giant data bank. It may be a first step towards this digitalization of humanity.
Let me just interject here, because yesterday we had a guest on from Israel, and a scientist, highly respected scientist, telling us what we were not told by Fauci, the World Health Organization, or any other leading proponent of the vaccine. By the way, this person is pro-vaccine, as I am pro-vaccine, always have been. And by the way, I've never told someone vaccinate or not vaccinate. I've simply presented caveat emptor, meaning consumer beware. First, does this vaccine Does it have the actual gold standard of double-blind placebo-controlled? And here's the key, is the placebo a saline solution? Did they follow the group for at least 3 years to determine the incidence, including delayed incidence, that can occur up to 3 years, as it has in children, after vaccine? And then what's its toxicological profile? Because something can be shown to be effective but also toxic. Mercury is a good example of that. And aluminum, and as an adjuvant to make the vaccines more powerful, an example of that, when there are other adjuvants that can be used without using something that is a neurotoxin in all of scientific literature. And I've spoken with numerous board-certified professors and scientists and physicians in toxicology. They all say the same thing. There's no such thing as a safe level of these toxicants. And yet, that is never discussed. You never hear anyone talking about polysorbate 80, formaldehyde, or any of the other ingredients in vaccines. If you had them tell you the truth and lay it all out and be honest about it, then people may have a different approach and demand safer vaccines. Or if you want a real safe vaccine, take away all legal identification that was put in place by Ronald Reagan back in 1998. And therefore, if they make a mistake, they have to pay for it. Well, suddenly, when they have to pay for their mistakes, I can assure you there'll be a lot less vaccines and a lot safer ones with a lot better research. Now, mind you, that is not to say that someone is anti-vax, and that's the argument. And that's a whole argument of control, meaning the same people saying the same thing from the New York Times, the Washington Post. Anytime you write or suggest something in an interview or on YouTube, that there's some questions, legitimate questions you have, even if you're a Nobel Prize winner like Luc Montagnier, showing that this was a human-made, not a natural-occurring COVID-19 variant, you're suddenly attacked, your character is destroyed, and as a result, you lose your reputation. And a lot of people have historically said, I'd rather keep my reputation, my livelihood, thank you. But now tens of thousands of doctors and scientists are coming forward and saying no. Well, that said, then here we have a situation. We have people who say, trust us, we're going to take care of your life, and we're going to give you this implant. It won't hurt. You won't even know it's there. And we're going to help you, because then if you have a problem, we'll know it and be able to help you with that problem, instead of telling the real reason they want control over us. This woman in Israel said the following. Israel is, as of today, a two-tiered system. One group can go about their lives normally. Another group, you cannot go into any public facility. You can't go into a restaurant, a theater. You can't go into an office building. You aren't even allowed to go to work. They can keep you from working and fire you. If you dare want to go outside of your immediate neighborhood, you have to wear, like a convicted felon or someone waiting trial, you have to wear an ankle bracelet or a apparatus on your body that will monitor your whereabouts, and you'll be monitored everywhere you go, everywhere you seek to gain some entrance. And again, even with that, you won't be allowed to have the same rights. You now are on a list, and this list is prepared already by the Netanyahu government that identifies you for not getting a vaccine, even if the reason you're not getting a vaccine is, A, like 130.5 million Americans who have autoimmune conditions, and therefore it would be a risk for them to get a vaccine. And yet Fauci, Bill Gates, CDC, FDA, National Institutes of Health, they want everyone to get vaccines, including babies, everybody, no matter what. For people who have multiple comorbidities and are near death, this has been shown in nursing homes where they were COVID negative to go COVID positive and then die, many of those people. That was also true in Israel, and she brought that to our attention. 12,000 people who were COVID negative got the vaccine and became COVID positive with severe side effects.
Yeah.
So there's legitimate reasons, and no matter what your reason, no matter what your medical condition, and even if you've been infected and survived, you now have natural antibodies. And those natural antibodies will minimally protect you at least for a year or longer. That's the latest study. And yet, you should not be vaccinated on top of natural immunity, because, once again, you can cause disruption, because when you're naturally immunized, you don't start producing indefinitely 24/7 everywhere in your body the spike proteins. When you're vaccinated, the rest of your life you might be producing these, and who knows what will happen with your health. Almost everybody loses their health, becomes susceptible to autoimmune conditions, and they haven't planned that at all. And as a result, today, double-class citizens, that's coming to America, it's coming to Great Britain, it's coming to the European Union, and the Great Reset will capitalize on it, because then you've got one group of people you monitor and supply something to and freedoms to, and another group do not get any of that. Your final thoughts on this, please.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is the context and the framework which is evolving. I don't think that the issue is a question of saying we're for or against the vaccine. I think or vaccination in general. I think the issue is that this messenger mRNA vaccine, first of all, is experimental. And it is unapproved by the FDA in the United States, namely the fact that it is being implemented under what is called emergency use authorization. But this emergency use authorization, in effect, is a scam, because it is based on the PCR test to provide the database to justify the vaccine. In other words, the COVID vaccine is not required, in as much as COVID is not a deadly, is not a major health concern, and people recover, and you also have curative and preventive medicine, which is being refused, or which has been, in fact, driven out, such as ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. But I think the main issue here is that the major pharmaceutical companies, but specifically Pfizer, BioNTech on the one hand, Moderna on the other, AstraZeneca is being pushed out, and so is Johnson & Johnson, up to a point. That's another area of discussion. There's a conflict within the pharmaceutical industry, where Pfizer is gaining in relation to its competitors. But I think what is important is that, as many analysts have stated, this is not really a vaccine, because it modifies the human genome. It's genetic. It's a form of genetic therapy or engineering. So that's one area. I'm not a medical doctor, but I've read these reports, so that's one aspect. But then, the fact is that the green light to market an experimental mRNA vaccine was granted, and that was back in December of last year, despite the fact that, according to the FDA, the vaccine was, in their words, an unapproved product. But then they say it's an unapproved product, but we will still provide permission for it to be used under the emergency use authorization. The emergency use authorization is based on a, from my standpoint, doesn't exist. It exists only in as much as you believe in the fear campaign. Yes, there's a fear campaign, which then sustains the emergency use authorization pretext. But if you look at the actual data of the PCR test and the estimates of COVID positives, and if you look at the fake death certificates which are being used as a criterion to justify emergency use, well, then you say, no, there's no emergency use. It is an experimental drug, and it's unapproved. And that means it's illegal. Now, I've consulted with a lawyer on that, and it's absolutely clear that this this mRNA vaccine is unapproved and illegal.
Also, two quick points to finish our program. The Imperial College original assessment based upon a mathematical model was found to be extremely flawed, not just minor flows, major flows. In Sweden, they predicted over 170,000 deaths. There was a tiny amount of deaths. They said they were substantially wrong. Right then and there, the world should have seen we're starting off with a completely flawed model, and let's change it. Let's get real people in here who know what they're doing. Clearly, this guy at the Imperial College did not, but they didn't. They continued with that. When they saw that the death certificates were being falsified, everything was death by COVID, and it was not, the comorbidities, and the FDA finally brought out a statement saying only 7% of all deaths are actually COVID by themselves, that means the others are comorbidities or other reasons. They should have corrected that. That would have gotten a much lower amount of dead people, which means you didn't have a pandemic, even an epidemic. Then the PCR test was at 45 amplifications, cycles, and it should have been no more than 25. And so they falsified all these false positives as if they were active cases. At every single measure, they were wrong. There are over 19 drugs that we know of that I have been able to document, and actually like a fluoxamine that's 89% effective, two studies, 13 authors, 277 people. But then you go to ivermectin, 72% effective, 56 studies, 469 authors, and 18,447. I've got every drug that has been in use and could be used, has been used, and showing it's effective. None of these were suggested. So from beginning to end, the world has been played, and I think it's just I think it's a crisis. Is the vaccine successful at preventing it? It was never tested for that. Hopefully they will do that. My hope is that forever, whatever reason a person uses the COVID vaccine, that it works for them. I support healthy, proper, and protective vaccines. And I want to see the science. It's still in the experimental stage. And yet you're not allowed to criticize it or you're considered a vaccine denier. I want to thank you very much, Professor Michael Chofsky-Udasky, for coming on and all the good work you're doing, especially with one of the most important platforms out there that cannot be censored because it's your platform, and that's Global Research. And people can go to globalresearch.ca and see hundreds of outstanding authored articles that you will not see anywhere in the mainstream media. I appreciate all your good work.
Thank you for this conversation, and I think our thoughts are with people worldwide, because we are living a major crisis which is affecting
you're right. Humanity. By the way, Professor, I'm going to invite you back because I want to spend an hour just on the people behind the Great Reset. I want to talk to you about what is the likely outcome for everyone on the Great Reset. Okay, got to run. Thank you very much. Thank you all for listening and have a good day.